a freeze is needed or some sort of moratorium, and that that's only achieved through negotiation.
North Korea faces and denounces more United Nations sanctions. It's Tuesday, August 8th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Check us out on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, a communique of compromise on the South China Sea. Hello, neighbor, finding new life in the United States. Contemporary Vietnamese art on the move, 3D brain surgery, and visiting a Silicon Valley cafe. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has denounced the latest United Nations sanctions, saying they represent a violent violation of its sovereignty. The official Korea Central News Agency said it will not put its nuclear deterrent on the negotiating table and vowed not to take a single step back from strengthening its nuclear might in the face of the U.S. threat. Earlier, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said Saturday's unanimous U.N. Security Council resolution toughening international sanctions on North Korea for its nuclear and missile programs leaves no doubt that Pyongyang must halt all such testing.
I think the strong U.N. Security Council resolution unanimously approved, working in coordination with China and Russia both, to put out a statement from the Security Council that I think is quite clear in terms of there being no daylight among the international community as to the expectation that North Korea will take steps to achieve all of our objectives, which is a denuclearized Korean peninsula. I think there should be no question in anyone's mind as to the common view held by everyone on that Security Council as that being the ultimate objective.
Speaking in Manila, Tillerson said the United Nations action makes it quite clear there is no daylight among members of the international community that they expect North Korea to take steps to achieve a denuclearized Korean peninsula. He also said a halt to missile tests would be a demonstration of Pyongyang's willingness to engage in dialogue. Late Sunday, President Donald Trump and his South Korean counterpart Moon Jae-in agreed the North poses a grave and growing direct threat and committed to fully implement all relevant resolutions and urged the international community to do the same. Mr. Trump, in a tweet on Sunday, said he was very happy and impressed with the Security Council action. The latest Security Council resolution bans North Korea exports of coal, iron, iron ore, lead, lead core, and seafood following two intercontinental ballistic missile tests. Stephen Norper, Korea Society Senior Director and a Columbia University professor, tells VOA's Victor Beatty full implementation could have a serious impact on the North's economy.
Speculation is that they may hit as much as one-third of North Korean exports, or over $1 billion. So they're designed to close loopholes and have real impact. Of course, the call from the Chinese for dialogue is one that most nations are putting emphasis on, and the United States is through the message of Secretary Tillerson, who also has said that dialogue is much needed. And the Japanese are a bit resistant and want to see sanctions have impact first, but it seems to be the consensus that we need to get to the negotiating table sooner than not, given North Korea's dramatic increases in terms of missile and nuclear enhancements.
U.S. so far does not seem inclined to engage in dialogue.
Well, there has been hesitation because the precondition was a commitment to denuclearization. But I think that the pragmatic concerns are such that the advances warrant talk sooner than not. And there have been many proposals across the U.S. public sphere and in scholarly and analytical circles that a freeze is needed or some sort of moratorium, and that that's only achieved through negotiation.
Were you surprised by the unanimity of the vote Saturday on the new sanctions?
No, the signals were that the vote would take place, and that wouldn't take place unless China and Russia were in line. So there had been some agreement that had been struck, although it took a month between U.S. and Chinese negotiators to get us to the point where there was movement and common accord.
Wang Yi described his talks with Ri Yong-ho of North Korea as very thorough. What might have been discussed?
It appears that the Chinese are conveying that they delivered a firm message to North Korea. At the same time, they tried to put that in a toned-down manner. They said they spoke to the North Koreans about not having too strong a reaction to these sanctions put in place, to take it in a measured way. At the same time, Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, also reiterated that there needs to be some trade-off in terms of U.S. and South Korean exercises, in essence, a freeze for freeze, and calls for the United States and South Korea and others to come to the negotiating table with North Korea.
Do you think the U.S. is going to inch eventually to some sort of dialogue, perhaps resumption of the six-party dialogue?
Well, they will come to some sort of dialogue. It may be, as the Chinese wish, in a six-party format. That may have been one of the areas of some private agreement.
On the sidelines of a regional security meeting in Manila, the North Korean foreign minister reportedly told his South Korean counterpart Seoul's offer for bilateral talks lacked sincerity. Last month, South Korean President Moon proposed military talks to ease cross-border tensions and resume reunions of families separated by the Korean War. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on VOANews.com. The top U.S. diplomat says to signal readiness for talks, North Korea should end missile tests. North Korea rejects calls to halt nuclear weapons development. U.S., Japan, Australia urge binding code for South China Sea. Australia finds missing U.S. aircraft. Trump Company applies for casino trademark in Macau. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The United States, Australia, and Japan Monday criticized China's ongoing land reclamation, construction of outposts, and militarization of disputed features in the South China Sea. The joint statement said any future code of conduct must be legally binding, meaningful, and effective. They also called for respect for last year's international arbitration ruling, dismissing much of Beijing's claim to the waterway. Late Sunday, the 10 foreign ministers of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations issued a joint communique that, without mentioning China, emphasized the importance of non-militarization and self-restraint in the disputed South China Sea. The 46-page communique voiced concern about land reclamation and activities which have eroded trust and confidence, increased tension, and may undermine peace, security, and stability. Carl Thayer, professor emeritus at the University of New South Wales, tells VOA the ASEAN communique was the product of compromise among the varying interests of ASEAN's members.
Vietnam was obviously definitely the one pushing strongest for even for a legally binding code of conduct, and that section was removed. And there are other quibbles along the way. But it's clear that Cambodia and the Philippines were those most active in trying to delete and succeeding all the critical references. This is a general statement setting out ASEAN's basic boilerplate policies without the elaboration. They took note that some ministers expressed concern. That's been in the communiques for a long time. And then they've turned, instead of talking about militarization, non-militarization as a way of softening that blow, but Malaysia wanted military assets to be included in the text. That was deleted. Vietnam wanted extended construction. That's been deleted. The point being, this is setting the stage for the next round, that ASEAN and China, having approved this framework code of conduct, they are now about to enter into what the ASEAN statement calls substantive negotiations, and China prefers the word consultations. So the next round is trying to work out the actual text of a code of conduct, and whether it's legally binding or not, I think, is still on the table, but China is opposing it quite strongly.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi also told reporters that talks on a code of conduct for the South China Sea could begin later this year when ASEAN's annual summit meets in the Philippines in November, provided there's no major disruption from outside parties, a veiled reference to the United States. Carl Thayer says the communique is playing into China's interests, but only to an extent.
It is, but what ASEAN is playing to is that this is a pregnant moment because of the discussions on the code of conduct, and it doesn't want to muddy the waters. Cambodia is always motivated to get out in front of China and clear the waves for it by taking anything that China could find offense, and that ASEAN, I guess, overall would be concerned that if they misstep, China could react strongly and drag its heels a bit more. China has shaped the ground. It shapes how they word their statements. For example, they keep mentioning the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, and China totally rejects the decisions made under that by an arbitral tribunal. ASEAN keeps reaffirming it, but yet it won't even mention that decision. So it's a victory for China. Why would China say it supports the UN Convention when it won't accept the compulsory dispute settlement mechanism which it ratified when it signed on to it?
Acting U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia Affairs Susan Thornton said countries involved in maritime disputes should halt provocative moves, such as improving or expanding or militarizing outposts to foster a diplomatic resolution. Happening now in Asia, South Korean prosecutors are seeking a 12-year prison sentence for Samsung chief Lee Jae-yong on corruption charges related to the political scandal that led to the impeachment and dismissal of former President Park Geun-hye. He is denied any wrongdoing. The verdict is expected later this month. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. The initial 90-day resettlement program for refugees in the United States is a whirlwind of activity that helps them find a place to live, a place to work, and initial introductions to American life and culture. But integration into American life extends well beyond a 90-day window. VOA's Kane Faribault met a woman in Pittsburgh who's trying to help refugee and immigrant families connect with the rest of the community.
Since leaving Afghanistan, M. Kazam Hashimi has experienced a series of firsts. His first American meal, his first American job, and now, his first American baseball game at the home of the Pittsburgh Pirates, PNC Park.
Today we are Pirates game, first time ever for my family. In Afghanistan, people are very big fan of soccer, and they don't know anything about Pirates.
His education in baseball is another part of Hashimi's long journey fleeing war in Afghanistan, where he worked as a translator for the U.S. Army, an increasingly dangerous job.
So I quit working there, as a matter of fact, because my family and I got threatened to death. So I had to quit, and I had to leave.
Using a special immigration visa, Hashimi and his family arrived in the U.S. in 2015. Though he spoke English and had connections with former U.S. military members, Hashimi was a stranger in a strange land, navigating a different culture. Then he received an email from a nonprofit organization in Pittsburgh called Hello Neighbor.
And you will get to meet new American families. You will get to understand American culture, basically almost everything about the United States and about the people. So then I was very interested in my family as well.
I think it's important to remember that refugees are people who are forced to flee.
Sloan Davidson created Hello Neighbor to help refugee families in Pittsburgh connect with Americans who wanted to help.
And I really thought a lot about how these two groups could come together and have meaningful interactions and really impact each other's lives.
So she began hosting events like picnics and library visits, pairing refugee families with American mentors like Michelle Baim.
I think it's vital. I think that we need to introduce these people into our culture. We need to accept them with open arms and help them integrate.
Now bonding over America's favorite pastime, Baim says her family has integrated so well with the Hashimis, they are more than just mentors. They are friends.
Their kids are 6, 5, and 3, and mine are 6 and 2, so it ended up being perfect as far as the age ranges go. And they love hanging out.
Here in Pittsburgh, we talk about being a city of bridges and how we build bridges. And that same mentality should extend, but does not always, to the newer wave of refugees and immigrants that come in.
With Hello Neighbor, Pittsburgh has built a bridge into M. Kazam Hashimi's heart.
City of bridges. I love it.
And could soon build bridges beyond the Steel City. Sloan Davidson says her email inbox is full of interest from other locations that want to adopt similar programs. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
ournews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korean delegates who attended the ASEAN Regional Summit in the Philippines say they won't budge an inch on strengthening nuclear armament in defense of their nuclear weapons program. Pyongyang is facing a new round of UN sanctions targeting North Korean exports. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, there's an emerging contemporary art scene in Vietnam. It includes a collective of Ho Chi Minh City-based artists who come from multicultural backgrounds called the Propeller Group. And while the group rarely gets to show its work in Vietnam due to censorship, there's a traveling exhibit of its work currently in the United States. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports on how themes of the Cold War, life, and death are represented in the multimedia exhibit now in Houston's Blaffer Art Museum at the University of Houston.
Musical, visual, personal. Vietnamese-American Brittany Tran has been to this exhibit more than once to see this film.
First it was the music, and then like the way that it was being filmed, and I just felt like I was a part of it. I just felt really connected to it in like a strange way.
Especially through this song.
It was a song written during the Vietnam War, and it's a metaphor for death.
This is Tuan Andrew Nguyen via Skype from his studio in Ho Chi Minh City. He and his family were among the boat people escaping Vietnam in the late 1970s. Educated in the U.S., Nguyen has gone back to Vietnam and helped found the Propeller Group, an artist collective with an exhibit exploring life, death, and their rituals during a time of conflict.
It's something that's always in flux, and I think part of that comes from like the many, many kind of wars that Vietnam has, you know, been engaged in over the last few centuries.
How people die and live as a result of politics and ideologies is a theme in this exhibit, as seen in this experiment, when this motorcycle called the Honda Dream is left outside overnight and stripped bare.
So this motorbike that was at once like a symbol of like the future and of economic mobility now is like a symbol for something else. The Honda Dream becomes this like physical manifestation of how ideas of capital and communism have kind of shifted over the last like 10, 15, 20 years in a communist society.
This exhibit's Houston curator says the Vietnamese-American community in town has been especially drawn to this exhibit.
And it's also one of the cities that has one of the largest populations of Vietnamese. This exhibition will resonate and will bring forth questions and will open conversations about the identity of Vietnamese-Americans.
Nguyen says the goal of the exhibit is to inspire the audience to ask questions and re-examine how they think about history and how that impacts their current beliefs. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a massive landslide in China's Sichuan province was caught on a cell phone camera and posted online. The viral video shows people fleeing the large dust cloud. A major road in the area was reported to have been blocked for about 3 hours. Great videos and more are found every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, life-size 3D models used by Hollywood for creating amazing visual effects can also serve as props for surgeons practicing complicated operations. Doctors at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland say even seasoned brain surgeons can benefit from training on realistic life-size models of a human head. We put our heads together with VOA's George Pudich to learn more.
Shooting a horror movie with grotesque characters often involves creating realistic three-dimensional models of faces, limbs, and depending on the level of gruesomeness, even internal organs. Based on that, surgeons at Boston Children's Hospital, working with a Hollywood special effects group, started a simulator program for practicing brain surgeries.
What ended up happening is our simulations felt more and more like films. They felt like cinematography. They felt like theater.
This lifelike model of a 14-year-old child's head also contains a realistic brain on which a surgeon can practice treating an excessive buildup of cerebrospinal fluid, a condition often seen among teenagers. Now, training is mostly done on cadavers and even certain fruits and vegetables. But a 3D model is better because it can be created with the specific anomaly surgeons have to operate on.
And we can do this in training courses in the United States, or we can take these models and work internationally and bring them to teach surgeons how to do this operation and other operations using 3D printed models. It's safe, it's realistic, it's repeatable, and the real beauty of this is that we can actually use the instruments that we use in the operating room on the 3D printed model heads.
Creators of 3D surgery models concede it may be a challenge to persuade their colleagues to find time to practice on their simulators, even though studies show that training improves both the efficiency and the outcome of surgeries. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
If you go to Silicon Valley, in the heart of it, there's a cafe where the biggest names in tech are known to take their lattes, attracting startup founders who frantically make their pitches to the venture capitalists holding court at the wooden tables there. Deanna Mitchell takes a seat in the Cupa Cafe in Palo Alto, California, where she finds has a certain electric buzz in the air.
Silicon Valley is the tech industry's epicenter. But what is the epicenter of Silicon Valley? It may be here, what looks like an ordinary cafe. For the tech community, Cupa Cafe is a meeting place of the who's who of Silicon Valley, where up-and-coming startup founders can buy their lattes with the digital currency Bitcoin while pitching to leading industry venture capitalists.
Yeah, I remember seeing Mark Zuckerberg sitting here and having meetings and people coming up.
Sergey Brin came in at one point with the Google glasses on, so people were taking pictures of him and posting it on Twitter.
Venezuelan-born Jean-Paul Coupal started the cafe with his mother and sister. Their goal? Bring fair trade coffee and organic cuisine from Venezuela to the Valley.
We really try to create a homey place, a homey environment where everybody feels comfortable. We specialize in specialty coffees from around the world, to crepes, and then even to Venezuelan arepas.
Beyond the beautifully decorated walls and savory cuisine, there's a buzz in the air that is not just coming from the espresso machine. The online business world has a real-world presence here. If you're in the right place at the right time, you may just get a seat at the cyber table.
Just from sitting here and having coffee and having a kind of a work business meeting at Cupa, I ended up becoming an advisor to two startup companies. That's the kind of crazy nest of connections that can occur here at Cupa.
And with Stanford University and other colleges nearby, the chance for opportunity is not lost on local students.
I'm currently teaching myself JavaScript here at Cupa right now. If someone happened to look over my shoulder and saw like what I was doing, I would definitely not say no to like any help.
A lot of the startups in the area come and they like to work at Cupa. Coding all day, so you've seen a lot of products that got developed at Cupa.
The secret of this cafe's success may be about being the right cafe at the right place at the right time. For now, it has the Silicon Valley buzz. Deanna Mitchell for VOA News in Palo Alto, California.
I'll take two. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our programs on iTunes and SoundCloud, speaking of technology. You can also find us at voanews.com and visit us, of course, on VOA Asia Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. You can either contact us on Facebook or send us an email the traditional way at voaasia@voanews.com. We thank all of our listeners at the University of Philippines who have joined us today in Dilmun on DZUP 1602 AM radio. Thank you so much. And thanks, too, to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Daryl Smith, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.